You're a SaaS founder. You've built something solid, but growth still feels harder than it should. Most SaaS companies don't fail because of bad tech. They fail because they've never become a must-have to the right customer. This podcast is here to change that. I'm Ton Dobbe, and this is the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. Every week, I talk to founders in the trenches, facing friction, making bold moves, and building companies that last. We dig into real choices around focus, positioning, customer pool, team alignment, the things that separate forgettable software from the ones that people can't live without. No hype, no hacks, just honest conversations to help you build something that people would miss if it was gone. If your SaaS should be indispensable but isn't yet, this is your podcast. Let's get into it. The guest on my podcast this week is Ken Rapp, CEO and founder at Bluestream.
Once your customer is at home, that's the moment where they will be most vulnerable and that curve of emotional connection to you drops. And it's almost like the buyer's remorse, you know, is setting in. You're all excited to go home with the product or to open the product. And right there and then is when you really need to conquer that new product and make it a habit and really get what you were hoping and dreaming for out of the product. But there's no connection between you and the company. So
this is Ken. We dig into how he turned a cracked guitar into a 10-year mission to solve what everybody accepts as normal. You'll hear why his first solution, IoT sensors, was completely wrong, and how that failure taught him the real problem wasn't monitoring, but connection. The conversation reveals what it actually takes to create a category, and why most founders quit before the market catches up. Well, hi, Ken. Thank you very much for making the time available today and being the guest on my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And the reason for that is because when I got the invitation to have you on the podcast, I started looking into like what Bluestream does. And I think it's remarkable. And that's a word dear to my heart. But we'll dive into that in a minute. A little bit about you. What drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
I really love helping companies solve unmet needs, looking for places where there's really no one had taken out a blank sheet of paper and asked questions about what keeps you up at night, and then was able to put together a team of people to solve those problems. So I love doing that. And I also really, really enjoy bringing together teams of people and helping them grow and head toward a common vision and mission, and just seeing the power of people is so delightful to me.
Yeah, I saw something around DNA-based team building, which makes a lot of sense. And we'll talk about that later. I think it's a perfect bridge to your company then, which you started, what I saw, in 2015. You founded a couple of other companies before, sold one. And what I read between the lines is that this company, Bluestream, was actually coming as an idea of a personal challenge that you had, or a personal problem that you experienced. What was what's the big idea behind the company?
Great question. So thank you for asking that. I'm a big rock and roll guitarist. I love playing my guitar. I play out in bands now that my kids are a little older. And I got a new guitar, an acoustic guitar, and don't tell my wife, but I have plenty of guitars, so I know how to take care of them. But this particular guitar, in a cold Boston, New England winter, dried out and cracked. And so I said, jeepers, why didn't the brand that made the guitar, or the place where I bought the guitar, I wonder why I didn't know. I'm a pretty savvy guitar player, but I didn't know that guitar was very sensitive to humidity or dryness. And so the concept of providing a connection between the owner of a product or the consumer of a product and the brand where they bought the product from around that product's attributes and the product properties and the product's needs itself, almost like the concept of giving the product the ability to talk to its owner throughout its life cycle. That's really what started it. Cool. And so it really is amazing that if you could imagine buying a product, I look at it this way. It's interesting. You know, we've all spent and invested money and time and effort in building campaigns with CRMs to get customers and then websites to help nurture customers through the buying cycle. We have direct-to-consumer e-commerce stores, and then we even track the product all the way to your doorstep. But then once it's on your doorstep, we're kind of stop. Maybe we send a promotional coupon saying, would you buy something else? Or you get a request for like, would you leave us a review? Right. But, you know, you're not, maybe you never even opened the product yet and you're being asked if you could leave a review. And so it's this real void from the doorstep until the consumer or the customer is actually 30 days later, 60 days later, onboarded with the product, learned about it. And they might be a beginner. They may have never had that kind of product before, or they might be an expert, but new to that product. So there's this awesome opportunity to connect a company with their customer from that doorstep to the delighted behavior. Now it's part of their habits and they use the product. And that's really what we're on a mission to help companies do.
Yeah, it's so common in the tech world, in the digital world, but it's so uncommon indeed in the consumer product world, the physical product world. Completely agree with you. So how does it work at the end? You know, I buy a product, I receive it, and then?
And I'll start with your comment there is really important about the digital world versus the physical and services worlds, you know. And then I'll come back and answer your question. But the digital world, the other day, you know, I was talking with someone about take the experience with an iPhone. You know, if you ever upgraded an iPhone, it literally says, oh, is this your network? Is this your internet? And you say yes when you open the box. And then it says, bring your other old phone close to me. And then hit the button. And then it says, okay, I'm about to upload all the files. Are you ready? And it does all these things for you. But in a physical world, if you bought supplements or beauty products or wellness products, or you know, you're really on your own with very, very small print, you know, on the side of the bottle. So I loved your point there. That's exactly right. We think of bringing the digital edge through most customers use text messaging, WhatsApp, or an internet-based messaging that's powered by our cloud. But basically, it becomes dialogues. We call them product experience journeys that will bring that digital connection to a company between them and their customer, even with physical goods. So now back to your question, how do you get started? You buy a product, let's say you bought some smoothies and you checked out and they're now on their way to your house. So we trigger the journeys, we call them, from any number of places. It could be a QR code in the box. It could be right from Shopify, WooCommerce, or whatever that purchasing system was, will start the journey. And we actually believe that the journey should start before the box arrives. Because what if you need almond milk with that smoothie and didn't know it? Like me, I got some smoothies. I'd never had smoothies before, but it was all the rage here. Everybody was saying how good they were for you for lunch. And so I bought them and they showed up. And then it's like, I didn't know how to even make them. Or that each bag has two servings, not one serving. And that because I was working toward running a 10K by the end of the summer, I didn't know that they had protein powders and things you could add to them. So we trigger off the purchase and start the nurturing pre-arrival and then continue the nurturing all the way through understanding why did you buy the smoothies in the first place? I think of it as the second why. The first why is because I wanted smoothies. The second why is really, well, because I'd like to run a 10K in September and I'm ramping up to it. By asking that question with a little dialogue, by telling the consumer, we're here to help you and want to make sure you have the get the best experience with our products. Consumers love that nurturing and will say, well, I'm going to run a 10K. Now, guess what? You know, there's cross sell for their protein powders and maybe there's some special desserts you could get that would boost your antioxidants, you know? So it's an amazing void right now. True. When you look out there at most physical products are delivered and then it's just this black hole or this lack of connection. And we're really excited about helping companies connect to their customers right there.
I would almost say the opportunities are endless. It's all about your creativity, how you use these products, and what options you now have to keep that connection going. Yeah, that's what I saw. That's what I had you on the podcast. So 2015, AI was just starting. That's where you started the business. Was AI a central part of the whole concept or the whole big idea already at that point in time, or has it evolved?
Great question. So not at all, not at all. So the first incarnation of Bluestream was to actually build an app and an IoT sensor that was built to go right into something like a guitar. And do what IoT is great at is monitoring. So it monitored the humidity and the temperature, and it could then give you alerts like your home systems or your car or, you know, a sensor you can put inside your guitar case. So the first incarnation of Bluestream was all about helping that first step of just monitoring the environment for consumers. Mm-hmm. But a funny thing happened was the data was then showing us trends on when a consumer was, you know, getting drier or getting too moist or getting too warm or getting too cold. And we started asking, well, maybe there's a lot more nurturing that could go on from the very beginning of the purchase all the way through to a healthy player who's buying strings and polish and oils and more guitars. And so that's what moved us over the last 4 years toward taking advantage of tools like machine learning and AI and agents to be able to really make it easy for our customer, the brand, to deploy what Bluestream does with our journeys and then help their customer have a fantastic 5-star experience.
Yeah. So it actually started quite niche with your guitar use case. And it became sort of a use case that can be applied to virtually any product. Correct?
That's right.
Because IoT is not part of the game anymore.
It's not part of the game, but we have partnerships that if you need sensors to monitor certain things, there's some great IoT companies out there, but you're absolutely right. Bluestream is pure SaaS. We, you know, you trigger from a Shopify or a purchase trigger and a journey will start, and it's simply messaging and dialogues that go on along that lifetime connection between a brand and their customer.
Yeah, exactly. We talked just before starting the podcast, and of course you already mentioned it in the beginning that one of the things that gets you going is helping people solve unmet needs. It reminds me of a couple of traits from my book. One of them that you also highlighted as one very important to the company is aim to be different, not just better. Do you have an example of that, of how you applied it in day-to-day life?
Yeah. So what's interesting is, I'll say it in the context of Bluestream, an unmet need is by definition an unmet need. So we learn to live with these latent pains. You know, we live our lives, and because there wasn't a solution, we all basically just make do with what we have. But when you have an opportunity like this is what we've done here at Bluestream, to have a problem and sort of start with a blank sheet of paper to go solve a problem and come up with a creative, innovative approach to that need, over time, what will happen is word will spread and a category creates. And therefore, you start to see, you know, like almost like the nerve being struck. And now that whole process takes a shape on a life of its own and a shape of its own. And so here, what we're seeing is exponential growth in terms of, you know, our end consumer population and the value of a connected customer. What's really spreading it, or you know, yeah. What really helps drive a business to become, you know, a category leader is all about the business value. And so we can really point to that the connected consumers on our platform today are over 90% of who started. So for example, if I'm back to my guitar case, if we're very, very busy in the school band and orchestra for kids space. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because the customer base, our client or the brands, they're renting an instrument. So they're getting an ongoing monthly fee for those instruments for the elementary school and high school kids. And if they lose, they must, our data says they lose about 50% of those customers after the first couple of semesters. So kids will try it, it's part of the school program. And then at the end of the semester, you know, they don't want to try it anymore. And I remember myself trying the trumpet, and then, you know, I wasn't great at it, and so I stopped. But if you could imagine an assistant, you know, a violin assistant or an instrument assistant that is nurturing and going with the pace of that renter and that player, encouraging them and giving them educational tips and recommendations, the next thing you know, at the end of the school year, you're not losing 50% of your customers. Only 10 or 20% are going to, you know, move on. So tens of thousands of young kids today are still playing year after year as a result of this nurturing. And what's interesting, cool. I look at it this way. One of my customers, clients, she said to me, when she was small and knew all the names of her customers, and she has a pet product, a probiotic for dogs' guts to help them with their digestive system. And she said, I knew all their pet names. I knew their names. And when they came into the store, I could talk to them about how was Daisy, the Springer Spaniel, doing. And I knew that Daisy had 10 minutes worth of walks every night after work. And on the weekends, she went to the park and played for an hour. And she said she could really help make sure that, you know, when you start a probiotic program with a dog, it doesn't fix the problem in the first day. It takes a few weeks, maybe a month, before the digestive system is now used to the probiotic. And she said she had great customer relationships, and that striking a nerve like, oh, you've really solved my problem. But then she grew. Mm-hmm. And as she grew, she couldn't talk to all of her customers, and she didn't know all the dogs' names anymore. And so a technology like Bluestream's product experience platform allows her to be connected to her customers as she scales without having to have a personal one-on-one phone call or coming into the store. And she gets data every day seeing how her customers are doing and if they have a question. And so the product experience journey, the thinking of the product in the center of the bullseye ring and the customer owner the next ring out, rather than the customer in the middle and the product is just an outcome of a sales or promotional program. It's a different paradigm, and that's really what's happening out there, and the word's spreading, and it drives revenue, retention, and referrals. All day long, you have delighted consumers who will tell their friends, they'll leave better reviews, and then they'll continue to buy more.
Exactly. What always fascinates me, you know, you started the company in 2015. Technology, of course, is the foundation of this. And you start at some point, you already mentioned you used in first place IoT, and of course, the product evolved from there. But what has been a fundamental thing that you did right back in the days that is still, almost the reason why you're so successful today? Was there one thing that you did really right in the beginning?
I do think solving a real problem, not a technology, bringing a technology to the world because you're in love with some technology idea, but really working hard to understand the problem is the key to any successful business. You find a place where there's a real problem. Now, whether that's an existing problem with another 1,000 companies in it and you want to do something better, or like my career has been all about problems that no one else had started solving yet, and then building categories around those.
Let me make a small interruption here. Ken just made an excellent remark that sets category creators apart from feature builders. He explained that solving an unmet need isn't about technology. It's about finding problems people have learned to live with. His clients didn't know they needed post-purchase engagement because they'd never imagined it was possible. And this is the difference between innovation and invention. Ken didn't create new technology. He applied existing tools to a problem everybody had accepted as unsolvable. And this is what remarkable software companies do. They focus on the essence, the problem beneath the symptom. They aim to be different, solving what others don't see as broken. And then they create something valuable and desirable. And that gets noticed. Want to master these traits as well? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
Either way, if you're not working on the problem, I think you can see a lot of challenges in building a company if you're not solving a real problem.
Yeah, you're making a good point there about, there's problems that you can solve, but if the, half the world is already solving them, you'd better find one that hasn't been solved yet, which of course is the golden, it's the golden egg. What have you learned over time to make that whole process of finding unmet needs easier? Because it's hard.
So that's a great question, because unfortunately, I don't think it's gotten easier. In fact, it's gotten harder. I'll give you some anecdotes here, from my experiences. I mean, buying a product today, it's so commoditized. I can go online right now and type in dog digestive products, and I'll get hundreds of thousands of hits on a search. And so how does a brand differentiate in the pre-sale environment now with e-commerce? E-commerce has commoditized, the whole world. And that's only in the last decade. I mean, think about, so if you were solving a problem that was going to build the brand in the front end and not know e-commerce was coming, you're in trouble. I mean, things will change. And so I thought, but to your point, I thought, because I had been through it a few times, that we could shortcut the system, and it didn't work. This is 10 years later, and I'm still, super excited every day to get up and face the challenges, and it didn't happen any faster, because I had the experience. You'd say, oh, I should be able to be smarter at this. But then with all the changes going on around us in this space, it's just, you have to be comfortable that it's an ongoing process and enjoy the ride along the way.
Yeah. You make a great point on this commoditized and commoditization of the market. And it happens in every industry. A, because there's technology that's coming in and coming in cycles faster than ever before. So the half cycle of the product is shrinking almost every day. And then, of course, there's also so many more opportunities that are created, because we are solving problems now that you couldn't even imagine 10 years ago. Let me see something came to mind here, because, we understand that how the product is different. But what stands out for me is that you're not only focusing on turning your customers into fans, but you're almost doing it by turning their customers into their fans. And that, I think, It is, of course, not for every product in the market, but it's a very powerful one if you can create one.
That's the key. And that's really where we started, because I was that customer, the consumer side, the end consumer of that guitar. And when you think about it, I was not a super fan as a result of not knowing. It's even worse. Because I was emotionally feeling badly that I didn't know what to do. I took the blame. I felt like I should have known better, Why didn't I go online and find out how to take care of this beautiful acoustic guitar I had purchased? So I'd never thought to call the company and try and get some help. I just lived with it. And I actually have that guitar hanging on my wall right now in my home studio, which has got a nice crack in it. And I'm never going to touch it. I still play it now and again because it sounds beautiful, but I can't take it out because it's, you know, you can't play too hard. There's this emotional problem that happens with your customer, and it's really early. It happens really early in the ownership process. So we track that product all the way to the doorstep or out the store, you know, and they're carrying, you carry that product out the store. Like you said, not a software product, but a physical good or a service. Yeah. And once your customer is at home, that's the moment where they will be most vulnerable. And that curve of emotional connection to you drops. And it's almost like the buyer's remorse, you know, is setting in. You're all excited to go home with the product or to open the product. And right there and then is when you really need to conquer that new product and make it a habit and really get what you were hoping and dreaming for out of the product. But there's no connection between you and the company. So, you know, if you're lucky as a company, as a business, if you're lucky, the customer will call you and call your support line and say, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm upset. I need help. But most customers won't. They'll just put it away and think it was them. And then they don't continue on using the product. So you get no repeat sales, no aftermarket, no referrals to other potential customers. So it's, I'll give you a stat. You know, we have over 90% of the consumers who have started on journeys. We call them the product experience journeys on behalf of our client base, our customer brand base. Over 90% are still on active journeys months, quarters, years later. And that tells you that we're all craving, as buyers of products, we're craving a connection with the brands that we invested in, and we don't have one. But when we have one, it's fantastic.
Exactly. That's I mean, I haven't seen it here in Europe, not in Spain, not in other countries as well. But you know, maybe it's time to get that like that. So the company has grown in the meantime. Started scaling at some point in time. I mean, I'm not sure how many customers you have, but. When you, for example, grew beyond 2 million US, what started to change in the company that you didn't expect?
Great question. Scale. It's all about, so in the first phases of our company, it was solving the right problem. So we just went out and went to work and rolled up our sleeves. I call it, we got bloodied elbows and skinned knees and you know, learned where that real essence of the problem was, and that's the lack of a connection between a company and their customer post-sale, a real value-added connection. And then we started to put technology in end consumers' hands and work with a handful of customers. And there's a whole phase of really learning about which pieces of the technology are the most important. It's the important and urgent, or the important and not urgent, or the not important and not urgent quadrants, you know, from a Stephen Covey. So really honing in on that. And then it became, okay, we've got a business, we're bringing revenue, retention, and referral, reviews and referral value, how do we scale it? And right there and then, I know my limitation. You know, I'm more on the technology side to go find that problem that isn't being solved and be very creative on the solution. And so it was time to bring in some leaders into Bluestream who have experience with SaaS and scaling SaaS and with product marketing and product management and scaling product management. And they just took what we had started and have brought it together so that any company can get started, as small as, you know, just starting up to as big as billions can use our technology. And so we now have what's called a journey builder, where you can go online and you can put in your company name and a product right there, and it will build you a dialogue map for engaging your customer after the sale. It will build you a flow chart that is really the first journey that you can start for your unboxing and onboarding to get your customer from doorstep to delight with a couple of clicks of a mouse. And our team is here, and they're just experts at helping understand the data you're getting from all of that. The data is incredible about how your customers are using your products. So really, to me, I think it was being as self-aware as I can be of my own strengths and weaknesses, and bringing people in who can surround me, who are, you know, smarter than me and better than me in other areas, and let me play in the lane I'm good at.
Yeah. In relation to that, to the scaling, I mean, you mentioned already a couple of pretty important business metrics. You know, there's revenue, there's profits, there's the churn is low, there's referral value. What has been a metric that you started to appreciate more over time?
Excellent question. So I really didn't understand the value of the zero party data. And zero party data we define as when a consumer themselves tells you, you know, I want to learn about this by clicking on, you know, a welcome message from a company, and then a few days later offering a link to what wood the guitar was made out of, and it came out of the forests that are being replanted by the company, and, you know, asking a question about how many miles or how many kilometers a week you're running in those new sneakers that you might have bought. And knowing that, oh, I run, you know, 3 kilometers a day, but someone else might run 5 kilometers a day, and the inserts of those sneakers might want to be changed at different times. And just seeing that the amount of engagement that consumers have when you ask those questions blows my mind. I can't believe, you know, millions and millions and millions of data points now that we have that's zero party, that consumers are giving to their brands. And that data is gold. And I didn't get this either, to your point. We were trying to make the connection between a brand and their customer, but didn't really understand the value of that data for a future product strategy and to change your, you know, a brand's product development thinking. And, oh, did you know that you could package this with that, the sneakers with some rainproof as a combination package, and because everybody who's running more than 5 kilometers a day runs in the rain and needs the rainproofing for their sneakers. I didn't realize that that was going to emerge from all of this wonderful effort with our customers and clients.
Wow. I mean, I've heard this before, that the data is becoming, it's almost like, you're overwhelmed by the power it actually gives you and how much it can change the trajectory of a company. And not in this case, your own company, but actually the companies of your customers' companies. Mm-hmm. One question to round this off. From all your experience as an entrepreneur, what would be a do and what would be a don't to share as advice to others that want to follow a similar trajectory?
Yeah, I would say a don't is solving a problem because you invented a technology or think you have a better mousetrap. Without a do is to go out into the market and talk to at least 50. And I'd rather see 100 interviews of customers around the problem and the concept of a solution and a pricing model before you ever start and go down the path, because then you're informed of how you might navigate your way. But it will still be it won't be a straight line. It will still be a zig and a zag to get you there.
True. Exactly. Well, last question then, where can people go to find out more about Bluestream or to say hi to you?
Yeah, by all means, I'm Ken at BluStream .io. Happy to help in any way we can. And our team is here for any of your listeners. as well as you can go to blustream.io and visit us. And if you want to put in your company name and your product, we have our Journey Builder AI is up online. You can check that out. And then we'll provide you with some links as well.
Good. Perfect. Well, thank you very much for sharing this wisdom. Fascinating products. I mean, I think everybody can do some recommendations for people that that should get check these out. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this wraps up my conversation with Ken Rapp, CEO and founder at Blustream. If you got value from this episode, please share it with other SaaS founders who need to hear this as well. And if you got 10 seconds, a quick rating or review on Apple Podcasts will help more people to find these conversations. Thank you for listening to the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. If you want more insights like this, subscribe to my daily email, Espresso with Ton. It's a 2-minute shot of clarity for SaaS founders who want to create pull, not push. You can sign up, along with getting my book, at valueinspiration.com. See you in the next episode.